What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. Again, I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day, and a huge happy Thanksgiving to all of our American listeners and followers south of the border. Hope you guys have a safe and happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Again, you can find my work on Twitter at Weiss Sports, and of course, the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. So make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On today's show, it's a busy one. We have some news to talk about. Of course, they're going to be joined by MLB analyst Jen Smith to chat about this. And we also have a very special guest. Yes, Josh Goldberg, contributor for Jays Journal. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, it's always good to have some news to talk about. You can always talk about anything in the offseason when there's actual tangible stuff going on. Makes the job a lot easier.
No doubt. Well, let's stop burying the lead. Of course, for those of you listening who are Jays fans, you probably know by now that Steven Matz, Blue Jays pitcher in 2021, no longer with the Toronto Blue Jays. He, of course, signed a four-year, $44 million contract with the St. Louis Cardinals. Jeff Passan of ESPN was first on that. You know, just after midnight, was one of those classic late night transactions that took place that I feel like woke up a lot of Blue Jays Twitter. So I'll start with you, Josh, and then I'll go to Jen. Just your thoughts on the deal that went down, Matt's going to the Cardinals.
Well, I guess first and foremost, you got to be happy for Steven Matz, considering where I think most people would look at his career entering the 2021 season. I wouldn't say it was his last chance because he throws pretty hard and a left-handed pitcher, but he needed to put something together to really ensure his future, I think, in Major League Baseball. And he had arguably the best season of his career, certainly one of the best seasons, and certainly, I think, the most complete season of his career. And considering the fact that he pitched in the American League East and had some success there, it was really impressive. And it was a great move by the Blue Jays to identify him as somebody that could make an impact for them and making that trade with the Mets. So first and foremost, that's great for him. But from the Blue Jays perspective, like, I don't think it's something that you should necessarily be losing any sleep over. You do have to replace Steven Matz in the rotation, and whether that's internally with somebody like, I don't know, Ross Stripling or Nate Pearson, or I think most fans and myself included would prefer externally, whether it's a trade or free agent, but there are options out there. You know, the middle class of the pitching free agent market, I think, is shrinking a little bit with some of the moves that have actually already happened. But I don't think that, you know, the Jays only willing to go to 3 years with Matz instead of a fourth year, I don't think you should be looking at that as anything other than discouraging. You shouldn't be discouraged by, rather. You should feel good that they were interested to a point, and they weren't going to go to an uncomfortable place on a deal like this, because I think Steven Matz settled as a four, or maybe, you know, best case scenario for your rotation, maybe a five, and a 4 year deal at $11, $12, $13 million in that range for a back end of the rotation starter, that always seemed a bit much for me. I was always more of a 2 or 3 year deal type of guy. So to hear that the Blue Jays weren't going to go beyond that, I think is encouraging in terms of how they evaluate certain players and how it fits for what they want to do and where they are right now. And there's other options out there. And I would expect, you know, whether it's before the beginning of December or after a possible lockout, they're going to be aggressive in terms of replacing that.
Jen?
Yeah, agree with Josh. I said yesterday on the pod that I thought, all things being equal, the Blue Jays had a good chance to bring back Matz, but clearly things weren't quite equal because the Jays weren't willing to offer that fourth year. And so, you know, of course, Steven Matz took that contract, and I would have too. And I agree with Josh. Obviously, the Blue Jays are going to need to replace him. There are options that are out there, and, you know, losing Matz, does leave that hole to fill, but should not be looked upon as some sort of failure of the front office or anything of that nature, right? Clearly, this team knew what their value was with Mats, and they weren't willing to go past that. I believe that they would go past that for somebody, you know, whom they feel can offer more.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, you both make good points. I just think, you know, that extra year, you know, it was a big sticking point. Of course, you know, it was later reported that the Blue Jays only offered 3 years. And when I initially saw the deal, I mean, I'm happy, Josh, that, you know, he didn't, you know, give up that fourth year, especially for, you know, back end of the rotation guy. And that's not to say that Steven Matz will, you know, do great things down the road in St. Louis, but, you know, 4 years is a long time. And when you're, you know, 30 years old, there's a little bit of uncertainty about when the decline's going to occur. And I think for the Blue Jays, I'd rather use those resources and, like you said, go out and get someone external to come in that could really bolster your rotation.
Yeah, and there are certainly a fair number of options. Like if you wanted to go the left-handed route to go lefty for lefty, if you want to replace a lefty in Mats with a lefty on the free agent market. I know a lot of people look at Carlos Rodon as somebody that they would be interested in. And like in a vacuum, that makes sense to me. He's not even 30 years old, but his injury rap sheet is long. And he had a really great stretch in 2021. And then towards the end of the season, he had some issues with his arm, his shoulder, kind of fatigued. He wasn't around towards the end of the season, then came back. His velocity was up in the playoffs against Houston, but he only lasted less than 3 innings. There's just too many red flags there. It just wouldn't be a comfortable situation, I think. And then if you're looking, it doesn't necessarily need to be a lefty. I think the one target that really seems to make sense to me is John Gray, who pitched for the Colorado Rockies. You know, he's had some issues at times, just kind of commanding his stuff and being consistent, but the stuff is really good. Like he can miss bats at a pretty solid clip. And, you know, getting away from Coors Field is always a bonus. I know he has had kind of even splits, whether it's been home or road, but he would certainly be somebody that makes some sense. And I really do think that the trade market is going to be something that the Blue Jays kind of hone in on when it comes to certainly improving the rotation, but maybe position player wise. It just seems like teams like Cincinnati and Oakland are really moving in a direction where they're going to look to make some trades. And if not fully rebuild, then maybe somewhere in between where they're not trying to win, but they're not actively tanking, and pitchers might be available from both of those teams. So I would keep an eye on the trade market as well, because I do think things could heat up there for the Jays.
One player who's been mentioned quite a bit has been Gausman. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the Jays potentially targeting Gausman. And if they go the trade route instead, who would you like to see them go after? Who do you think they could reasonably target and potentially get?
So when it comes to Gausman, I've been a fan of his since he got to San Francisco, because it just seemed like he figured things out. I think Gausman is that you don't bring back Robbie Ray, that's who might make sense, because it's just hard to envision. I don't know if both those guys are going to get 9-figure contracts, but if they don't, they're both going to be close, and it's hard to envision the Jays committing to both. But Gausman would be great. I mean, he's a 2-pitch pitcher these days. It's basically just fastballs and splitters, and he had some issues in the second half of the season. You know, there were some it just seemed like he maybe ran out of gas a little bit, and maybe that was after a shortened 2020, adjusting your body again to the grind of 162 was maybe an issue for him. I think he would be great. I know that some people might look at the track record that he struggled in the division pitching for Baltimore. I just don't think he's the same pitcher, the same way Robbie Ray is not the same pitcher he was even last year and a couple of years ago. Kevin Gausman isn't that same pitcher. So he would be a really good fit if the Jays aren't able to bring back certainly Robbie Ray. And then when it comes to trades, you know, Luis Castillo of the Reds has always been the big fish for me, but it doesn't seem likely that they're going to look to move him or Tyler Mahle. Sonny Gray has his benefits, but he struggled for the Yankees in the American League East. I'm just not sure if that's necessarily the avenue I would go. I think Oakland is where I would be honing in, because I think that they're going to trade multiple major pieces off of their team. Like, I would be surprised if Matt Olson is wearing an Oakland jersey. Matt Chapman's a possible trade. And then they've got three really good pitchers in Frankie Montas, yeah, Chris Bassett, and Sean Manaea. And I think Montas is probably the least likely of those three to be moved. And Manaea Manoa would be really cool if you could arrange that somehow in the rotation, if you could get both of them. And Manaea is a nice pitcher. He throws hard, misses bats as a big, big left-hander. And Bassett is really good too. So I think that either of Bassett or Manaea would be realistic targets who could come in and, you know, be the third guy in your rotation, or even if they're on a good stretch, your number two, depending what you do with Robbie Ray, if he's at the top of the rotation and right there with Jose Berríos.
With Josh Goldberg, contributor for Jay's Journal. Josh, I mean, you mentioned Robbie Ray, you know, a few times in that previous answer. And obviously, you know, we don't know where it's going to go with Robbie Ray. And certainly, you know, what a banner 2021 season he had with the Blue Jays, ending with, of course, winning the AL Cy Young. I've always sort of been in the camp, and I think, you know, Jen agrees with me too, that, you know, Ray, you know, the chances of Ray coming back are slim. I mean, I feel, because I, you know, a lot of teams are going to be wanting him and certainly going to be willing to pay for a guy like Robbie Ray. So I'm just sort of curious from your perspective. I mean, do you feel like getting Robbie Ray back would be worth it? Or do you think some of the names that we've mentioned replacing him would allow the Blue Jays to get better for the 2022 season?
So it's a really, I've kind of wrestled with this, like even going back to the regular season, where, you know, sometimes I think you slam dunk, you got to bring him back. And then other times it's, well, it really is dependent on what kind of contract you're talking about. I think like where I've sort of landed is beyond 4 years.
Yeah.
That's uncomfortable to me, considering some of just historically the type of pitcher that he's been. There's a lot of variance to what he does. Like, he can be all over the place within a start. This year, it all went together. The stuff has always been there. He just needed to put together a better plan and have better command. And this year, everything worked. But some of the same issues still are there. Like, in terms of home runs, he still gave up a ton of home runs this year. And he struggles third time through the order against really any lineup. You could say that about a lot of starting pitchers. But when you're making a major financial commitment to a starter, you would like to at least feel pretty good about their prospects of giving you consistently, you know, seven innings. He did it a bunch this year, but still the splits were rough that third time through the order. So like the fact that he kind of scrapped his changeup and his curveball and was basically running fastballs and sliders, if he could get those back or mix one in, or certainly both, would be great. And he's not just a two-pitch pitcher. Just the idea of a five-year, $100 million-plus dollar commitment to a two-pitch pitcher who struggles with home runs and has had issues with command in the past, I think, like, you're probably, if it's five for 100, I think you're probably still looking at that as something that you can get behind. I think that there's certainly a lot of downside, like there is with almost any free agent contract for a starting pitcher, but my kind of cap is 4 years for him. Like, what the AAV is, that's less important. Like, if it's 4 years, 80 to 100 million, I think I can get behind that, but I'm probably leaning more on the side of it's less likely than not. Like, I would say less than 50-50 if I had to put a bet on it. In my gut, that Robbie Ray will be a Blue Jay next season and beyond.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. I mean, I just think for me, you know, Robbie Ray had an incredible 2021, but, you know, you're absolutely right. Like the years past are question marks, and then you don't know what the future is going to be. I think, to me, the interesting thing about potentially Ray coming back is that, you know, quote unquote relationship with Pete Walker, right? I mean, because that's certainly been talked about a lot, you know, just how, you know, Pete Walker has really, you know, reworked and remade Robbie Ray, and it'll be interesting if he does sign back, whether how much that relationship certainly, you know, perhaps contributed. I mean, obviously, again, it comes down to dollars and cents in term, but I think that's an also an interesting thing. But I think at the end of the day, though, you know, the Blue Jays are probably, you know, thinking maybe a shorter term deal, but it'll be interesting to see what Ray wants. But I think when it's all said and done, though, it's not going to be for a lack of trying. I think this front office is going to really dedicate trying to bring Ray back. It's not like in some years past where that may not have been the case, just in terms of payroll and whatnot. So the front office is going to definitely work hard to try to bring Ray back. It then just comes down to what Ray wants at the end of the day.
Yeah. The situation, like he's given some interviews, like when, after he won the Cy Young, that like he was interested in coming back to Toronto, but obviously was also interested to play the free agent game, and he deserves it. Like he had as timely of a season as you could ever hope for any player in any sport, right? Coming into a contract year, had a lot of question marks, and have this unsung hero Cy Young out of nowhere season. He's put himself in a position to be the talk of the town, the toast of every front office, and to kind of ignite a bidding war. And like, there are plenty of teams, I think, that are going to be lining up for Robbie Ray. I feel like Detroit is a team that I'm kind of keeping an eye on, because there's all this kind of tides turning for them, and the momentum is kind of turning towards them, that they're at a point, they had a nice season, kind of a surprising season, especially from June on. And they've got AJ Hinch, who is certainly a proven manager, even with all the scandal with the Astros. But they're talking about spending real money, and so is Seattle and teams like Texas. I guess you just have to think how much you're going to prioritize winning versus really striking it rich in a free agent situation, because it's hard to argue that over the life of, let's say, a 4 or 5 year deal, looking at the Blue Jays, Detroit, Seattle, Texas, maybe you could make an argument that Seattle and Detroit, with some of the prospects they have coming up, could get there. But the Blue Jays are firmly positioned with the right moves to be World Series caliber next season, 2023, 2024. And I don't think you can necessarily say that about teams that would be most linked to Robbie Ray, unless you want to throw the Red Sox into the mix. And then, you know, that's probably nails on a chalkboard to every Jays fan.
I tend to agree with you, Josh. My concern about Robbie Ray, you know, incredible season aside, are some of those numbers, those peripheral numbers, you know, like the home runs, and for example, that he gave up. And then just even looking at the history of his career, you know, was this Cy Young year, you know, a one-off, or did he genuinely figure something out that he can actually carry forward for years to come? And that's a question that we can't answer. The Jays would have maybe more insight into that than we would. There's one more pitcher I want to ask you about, because his name keeps coming up and he would be a huge get, and that is Max Scherzer. Do you think the Jays should go after him? Do you think dollar-wise it makes any sense for the team to pony up for a guy like Scherzer, given the season that he just had and continues to have, and the experience that he brings?
100%. Like, in a perfect world, if you could get Max Scherzer, no question about it. Like, I wouldn't be upset. Like, if you told me that the Jays signed Max Scherzer to a 3-year deal for, I don't know, $35 million per season, you might look at that and say, you know, he's pushing 40s in his upper 30s. That's a huge commitment. But like, in terms of the season he just had, he was a monster after the trade to the Dodgers. Like, he was one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, not just the National League. And he got it done in the playoffs. He probably ran out of gas a little bit after he came in relief against the Giants, and just the Dodgers were playing high intensity games down the stretch. And he might have been a little bit out of gas there in the NLCS against Atlanta, but he still throws hard. He still misses a ton of bats. He would be, in a perfect world, the undisputed number one choice for the Blue Jays, like ahead of Robbie Ray ahead of Kevin Gausman. He's in a tier unto himself with the Cy Young track record. But I just feel like, you know, he's going to be pulled to the West Coast. Like, right. If he's not going back to the Dodgers, the Angels, I feel like, make a ton of sense because of their just consistent need for impact starters. I feel like he probably ends up in Los Angeles, and like, as perfect as it would be, it's hard to see. But like, if the Blue Jays were even to have a conversation with him, like if he granted them the time of day to at least even have a meeting, I think that would speak volumes to where the Jays are, that somebody like Max Scherzer, who all this report that he wants to be on the West Coast, might still even at least entertain the idea of what the Blue Jays might have to offer. That would be a good sign for where they are. But even so, I think that, you know, what we heard from Berríos, the fact that George Springer signed here, I do think that free agents of all shapes and sizes, ages, where they want to be in terms of their career, what their priorities are going to take the Blue Jays more seriously and be prepared to have a conversation with them about, you know, what everything entails in terms of being a member of the Blue Jays organization.
Well, Lucas knows my stance on this, which is to back up the truck for Max Scherzer if he gives you that opportunity, yeah. Right? It's not my money. Go spend it. Go get yourself a guy, right? If you can. But I think you're right. I have a feeling that the Dodgers will simply offer more. And of course, the allure of living in California, it probably is going to trump whatever the Jays can offer. But I agree. He would be my ideal candidate as well.
And the interesting thing too, I think, is, you know, and you mentioned how, you know, free agents, you know, are going to be taking, you know, those Blue Jays conversations. And I know Jen and I previously talked on the podcast, I mean, how Scott Boras used to view the Blue Jays, like it used to be blue flu, right? And now the Blue Jays are really in the, you know, in the running with everyone, right? Like, I feel like every day you open Twitter and you see an insider say that the Blue Jays are involved with this name or that name. And it just goes to show you where this team is right now. I mean, this team is in the competitive window. They want to win right now. And it's great to see that the front office is committed to that. Certainly ownership committed to that via the payroll, as Mark Shapiro has previously alluded to. So I think, look, anything to make this team better is what they're going to do. And they're not going to be afraid to contact some of these, you know, potential, you know, these UFAs and have a conversation about potentially coming to Toronto.
Yeah. They're going to be having a lot of conversations this offseason with a lot of different players. And like, I think like you guys alluded to, you know, they're going to try their very best to bring Robbie Ray back. And there's no question that the same thing is going to be happening with Marcus Semien. Like, I think it's fair to say that the priority is bringing back those two or one of those two. And you're going to focus on that first and foremost, but there are certainly going to be thinking about other players that are out there, and they're going to be navigating the trade market as well. It's hard to get a gauge on what's going to happen just in terms of the fact that we're what, like a week, 10 days away from a possible lockout situation. And it's really kind of uncharted territory because there hasn't been anything like this in baseball in a couple of decades. I just have no idea what's going to happen in the next week in terms of the amount of player movement. Is it going to be a ton? Is it going to be not much at all? Is it going to be somewhere in between? I just feel like all possibilities are on the table.
No doubt. And we've already seen some moves, Josh, but I honestly think that the bigger free agents, like a Carlos Correa, for example, like I'd be shocked if he's signed prior to the lockout, because I think for a lot of these big free agents, they want to see the landscape, right? And that's probably what their agents would be telling them, right? Like, you know, see the landscape of what it is, because once a CBA gets signed, there's going to be a spending spree, right? Because it just got signed and people want to get going and spend. And I feel like maybe some of these free agents might get even more money, right? Just given the fact that a new CBA has been announced and there's new economic conditions for the sport.
Yeah, it's true. I think you might get a couple. Like it seems like Corey Seager is the most likely of anyone to of those big fish to make a decision. I remember a couple of weeks ago, there were reports that maybe Marcus Semien would be in the mix, but it's probably more of what we've already seen of, you know, certain players in that, I don't want to necessarily say middle class, but a tier or two below, where their market is strong and, you know, they want to get things locked in so they can have that sense of security and that peace of mind before an undetermined amount of time, probably, where there's not going to be any movement. And how close is it going to be in terms of a new CBA to the start of the season? It seems like everyone thinks February and the season won't be impacted, and maybe it will mean a more condensed spring training. But I still would be surprised if the Jays don't do anything. Like, I expect at least a piece of business or two to be done before the early part of December.
Here's hoping to, Josh, because that gives podcasts like us stuff to talk about, and that would be a lot of fun to see what happens. Of course, we're joined by Josh Goldberg, contributor of Jays Journal. Josh, of course, you recently wrote a piece about Jose Ramirez. And of course, you know, the Blue Jays have been, you know, that name's been floating around in terms of a potential trade target for the Blue Jays. Obviously, the Blue Jays, you know, need, you know, an upgrade at third base, and getting Jose Ramirez would be certainly that. I'm just curious, you know, what makes in your mind, you know, Jose Ramirez that perfect target for the third base side, and maybe guys that the Blue Jays would need to give up perhaps in order to get someone like a Jose Ramirez.
Well, I just think that, you know, like, I might be stating the obvious, but he kind of flies under the radar as being one of just the consistently great players in the league. He doesn't get talked about very much. I know it's Cleveland and he's not a household name, but he's a perennial star, all-star level player, a gold glove caliber player at third base, silver slugger type, power, speed, switch hitter. I know that the Blue Jays lineup had a lot of great moments this year, and on the whole, it was an excellent offensive season for them as a club. But I don't think anyone is going to deny the fact they were too right-hand heavy. And in terms of productivity from the left side of the plate against right-handed pitching, they were in the bottom tier in Major League Baseball. I think they hit the fewest home runs from the left-handed side of the plate against right-handed pitching. They had a below average WRC plus. They didn't really have a lot of productivity because there weren't really a lot of left-handed hitters in the lineup. Like, it was a lot of Corey Dickerson. So Ramirez, switch hitter, they need more at third base, I think. I just think he would be perfect.
They also right now need somebody to play second base. So, you know, there's Espinal, obviously, who could maybe slot in. You could argue that Kevin Biggio could have a role. What do you envision for second base next year? Do you think it's going to, you know, if they, for example, are able to sign a guy like Ramirez for third base, that they're going to have to keep internal to fill the need at second? Or do you see them also trying to go outside the organization to fill that role as well?
So there's like a lot of different possibilities when it comes to second base. I guess priority one would be Marcus Semien. And if that doesn't happen, then I think you're looking at, you know, addressing third base and then having Biggio and Espinal as a platoon situation at second base. And they can play in other spots in the lineup, but I just don't think you can have Kevin Biggio and Santiago Espinal as your third base tandem. There's just not enough there offensively. And as much as, you know, Espinal overperformed, he still only hit two home runs. Like, he's a good glove and a nice bat, but I just don't think he profiles as an everyday a third baseman offensively. So I think you got to make an impact. Like, if it, your infield situation on the left side is, well, second base and third base is Espinal and Biggio at second, and then Kyle Seager or somebody like that at third base. To me, that's not good enough. That's not high enough of a level of impact. Like, Matt Chapman would be great from the A's, but I think the priority has to be Semien, and then find a way to get Jose Ramirez. Like, I know Cleveland's not going to be all that likely to trade him. And you might say, well, he's 2 years away from free agency. Why are you going to move legit prospects for him? Because he makes you a way better team and significantly increases, I think, your chances of winning the World Series in the next 2 years. And you can always replace prospects. like the likelihood also of those prospects necessarily turning into Jose Ramirez at any point in their career, also a bit of a crapshoot, and certainly not in the immediate window, I think, of your winning here in the next 3 to 5 years. Are any of those players that you might move going to make the level of impact that Jose Ramirez could over the next 2 years? I lean no. And that's why, to me, he's the number one choice when it comes to addressing position player needs at third base, because he just is, I think, the best option that could be available that totally changes the bottom line when it comes to your team and changing its fortunes and winning ball games and giving you a better chance to be a World Series contender.
Josh, you also wrote an article about relievers as well as Craig Kimbrell as well. I mean, you know, certainly the bullpen is an interesting one because that's, you know, every team, you know, needs a good bullpen, you know, to have success, particularly in the postseason. You know, it's more of something, you know, that teams may address, you know, at the deadline perhaps, but perhaps in the offseason, depending on what they're thinking of doing. So, I'm just curious for you. I mean, because again, the bullpens can change. And of course, this was such a hot button topic for the Blue Jays this year, certainly for the first half of 2021, was just, you know, bullpen couldn't get anyone out. Mm-hmm. It got a little bit more stable towards the end of the 2021 season with guys like Mesa, Richards, and Simber. I'm just curious. I mean, Craig Kimbrell maybe to Toronto, or do you have any other targets that would really help improve the bullpen?
Craig Kimbrell would work. The cost in a trade, I think, would have to be pretty reasonable. And it's hard to envision maybe Chicago selling low on him. When they gave up legitimate assets to get him from the Cubs, they probably want more in a return than what I think a lot of teams would be prepared to pay. But whoever you're looking at in terms of relievers, they have to miss bats, because even looking ahead right now in terms of who is on the roster and is going to be a bullpen option for the Blue Jays in 2022, it's still a lot of the same principles as 2021. And you know, the likes of Richards and Simber and Mesa, all those guys, like you could feel good about them. I think that you have to assume that with Simber and to some extent Richards, there might be some regression there because they don't miss bats at a super elite level. Mesa, I think there's something there with the level of sink he has on his fastball, that he could just limit hard contact and get a lot of ground balls and miss bats at a decent clip. But you just have to strike more guys out. You can't rely on putting the ball in play out of the bullpen. And too many times last year, there just wasn't enough swing and miss from the bullpen outside of a guy here or there. So whoever it is, and there you'll always be able to find options. Like Kendall Graveman just got a 3-year deal. The relievers are always going to be valued. Aaron Loop got $7.5 million per season. Whoever it is, whatever you're prepared to pay, whether it's a 1-year deal or a multi-year deal, prioritize strikeouts as much as anything else, because I think in a lot of ways, missing bats is going to be the key to any consistent, sustainable bullpen in today's Major League Baseball.
Josh, we are running short on time, but I'm just wondering what you see for Nate Pearson's future. Do you see him as a starter ultimately, or do you think he's destined for the bullpen?
My heart still says starter, because like, I just think that he's still relatively young. I think he's started. The clock is definitely ticking a lot faster in terms of the need for him to, number one, stay healthy, but also just be consistent. But I think he needs to have a really strong spring to not be a reliever. And he's got to stay healthy, obviously, number one again. But I still think he makes starts this season, whether it's to start the year at some point. But I think, you know, I think this might be a Major League Baseball situation wide. But I just think it's going to be different. Like if he starts, it's not going to be with the intention necessarily of going 7 innings and throwing 100 pitches and going 3 times through the order. It could be a raise type of situation where you just let loose, empty the tank for 3 to 5 innings, 4 innings, something like that. Maybe he gives you into the 6th and then just live with that. I don't know how likely it is, certainly this season or really at any point, that Nate Pearson consistently is going to be giving you 6-7 innings every time through the rotation. I think kind of baby steps, start with 4 or 5. And if he can eventually get to a point where he's healthy enough and producing and consistent enough to give you 6 or more, then you'd love that. But there's plenty of work to be done before you're anywhere near the point.
Well, this has been a terrific conversation. Lots of news to shout about, of course. Steven Matz no longer being with the Blue Jays, but also off-season content and questions. Josh Goldberg, contributor for Jays Journal. Josh, really appreciate you coming on. And before we let you go, where can people find you on Twitter?
At JGoldberg12 is where you can find me on Twitter. I'm always tweeting Jay's stuff, trying to encourage people to get in my mentions. We can go back and forth. It's always fun interacting with Jays fans. They're a one-of-a-kind bunch. And yeah, every so often there'll be articles at Jays Journal thinking of stuff throughout the offseason. Hopefully there's more news so we can actually react to tangible stuff, but to always have some ideas floating around in my brain. So you can find me there, find me on Twitter.
No, you know, Josh, you're one of the best, you know, one of the staples of Blue Jays Twitter and interacting with fans. So really grateful for this chat. And Jen, before we let you go, where can people find you on Twitter?
So people can find me at baseball_Jen, and that's Jen with 2 N's. And Josh, thank you for coming on. And if for some reason, folks, if you're not following Josh on Twitter, give him a follow. Like he said, he's really interactive and you'll have a lot of fun and interacting with him.
Appreciate that. Thanks guys. This is great.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. Now make your second listen. Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets is hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is also free and available on all platforms. So for this episode of Locked On Blue Jays, I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. We'll chat again soon.